Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, your co-host for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Post. Hello, lovely Michelle Post.
Lovely Scott Grossberg. How are you? Oh, can I do a quick shout out?
Of course.
Okay. So I just got back from Dallas, where there's an annual conference called the Eye Bank Association of America. These are cornea recovery and transplant professionals, right? And it travels. It was in Dallas this year. And I met some of the loveliest people and had these great chats about burnout prevention and mental health and taking better care of your staff and your colleagues. And so some of them said they were going to tune in. So I hope they tune in.
Oh, wonderful.
Hello. Hello, welcome. Our new audience.
Well, yeah, welcome to all of our new friends. By the way, you just
and
brought up
former friends.
You talk about triggering. You just brought up one of my worst nightmares, living nightmares. I'm convinced that in a former life, my eyes were put out or I was blinded, one of the two, because you can't get near my eyes. I can't put in eye drops. There's no way I'm ever going to wear contacts. I'm not doing this, you know, putting my finger in my eye.
Your eye.
And I've watched some of these shows, right, where they're doing cornea transplants and it's like, What do you mean you're awake? What do you mean you're watching them do this?
I know, like, I don't understand that part.
I applaud all of them for doing wonderful work.
Yes. And can I tell you, there was a keynote speaker where a young little girl, I want to say in elementary school, she died and became a cornea donor. And they transplanted into another young little girl. Both the donor family and the recipient family have met, and they were there together on stage, and they honored them for all their work in
what a cool thing.
Talking about cornea donation and transplantation and giving sight to another person, you know. So yes, you don't have to have anybody touch your eyes, Scott, while you're alive. But maybe you could think about after you're done using your eyes what you want to do with them.
Oh, no. By the way, we've never actually discussed this on the show.
Oh, we haven't. Yeah.
But my wife, she didn't convince me like she was evangelicizing, proselytizing it. It's just that she's always been very adamant that if on her death, she has some body part that will help somebody lead a better life, let it bless somebody else, right?
Oh, she's and such it took, a sweetheart.
And it took quite a while because I did the Egyptian thing. I want all my body parts all together, put them together so that when I come back, I can collect them all and go somewhere.
Not magical thinking at all.
And exactly. And so, you know, I won't go into my whole process that I went through, but ultimately, yeah, I am now a registered donor.
Oh, so me too.
I only have one restriction.
Yeah.
And Carolyn knows that. And it's, I do not want my body used for
science.
Yeah. Uh-huh, it's like, if it's going to help somebody, go out and do what you can. But you know, I don't want to lay on some slab and let somebody play around with my body. It's not going to happen.
And now I definitely know people who became whole body. It's called a whole body donation. This is a whole other episode, but I know people who in their death became whole body donation, and the way the medical schools honored their family was really beautiful. But you and I have just discovered something that we're similar in that I'm public and I'm private. So the idea of my whole body intact, laying naked on a table for people to see, on an ongoing basis feels very disturbing to me personally. Other people, they're like, let it fly. And I so am grateful for them, because we wouldn't have such great doctors and scientists if there weren't whole body donors out there. But you and I have bumped up against, at least so far in my life, I haven't figured out how to be comfortable with whole body donation.
Well, just do whole body donation with clothes.
For a seamstress, yes, because all seamstresses and fashion designers want to work on a deceased cadaver, because that's, you know,
there you go. I gotta learn to fit clothes somehow. All kidding aside, though, I have been since my wife and I have had that discussion, I've just seen and read and heard so many stories of people who've benefited from organ donations that like, why wouldn't you do this, right? It's anyway,
vast majority, like 80% of people seem to be pro donation. So aside from that, I also collected a tip for our audience before we get into the power of positive thinking. If you want to hear it today, it takes a little bit of an explanation, but if you notice that you're hanging out with someone who's kind of repetitively or chronically negative or repetitively or chronically critical, and they make a statement about you that's critical, like, you're so bossy or something, right? Or I don't know, whatever. You're such a tightwad, you know, you're so cheap. And you stop and you go, is that really true of me? And you realize, well, you know, I, in some ways that might be true, but really I don't identify with that statement. You know, you've done some soul searching. I want you to stop and remember that sometimes people use projection. What that is a psychological thing that when we don't want to admit something about ourselves, we project our negative qualities onto another person, because it's so uncomfortable to believe them about themselves. So let's say I secretly worry that I'm cheap and stingy, and I can't, it's so distressing for me to stop and think about that or changing that behavior or being honest about that behavior. So I'm going to call other people cheap or stingy. Or, you know, I secretly am so angry and bitter, but I don't, it's too uncomfortable and psychologically damaging for me to actually sit with that and work through that and deal with that. And so I project that on other people. She's so angry, they're so critical, blah, blah, blah. So rather than let someone's negative projection really deeply wound you, please, 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 psychologically, as part of your self-care, consider the source. And granted, a broken clock is right twice a day, so they might have some little inkling about you, but please, before you beat yourself up for days on end, allow yourself the possibility that the person might actually be talking about themselves.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to piggyback on that, if I might.
Okay, good.
Two things. I'll start with the positive, the reverse of that. And I have long believed, because I when I work with folks, We talk a lot about heroes and mentors and guides and the people that they look up to, the role models.
Yeah.
And the what Michelle has just said is also true in that positive situation. Oh. You are not going to find a role model that you do not see some reflection of yourself in.
True.
And so, right, there's the reverse of that, where you can have positive projection and realize, well, there are a lot of heroes that I have that a lot of people have never heard of. It's not a competition. It's not a compare and contrast. It's what in them do I see that I actually get inklings of or hints of or sparks of in myself? And then you want to build on that.
Yep.
The other thing, and I've used this quote on the show before, but I'll say it again in light of what Michelle just said. I've always loved the show, The Story Justified. And the sheriff in there made this great quote, and we'll leave it at that before we move into the show. And here's the quote: if you run into an asshole in the morning, you ran into an asshole. If you run into assholes all day, you are the asshole.
You're the asshole. That is a very good point.
So when you run into somebody who's constantly badgering, yep, critiquing, being negative, bullying.
Yep.
Rather than beat yourself up and be a doormat, rather than doing that, it's realized that's them.
Right, right. That's my point. That's my point is I will have clients come to me who are very thoughtful. They've been working on themselves for 6 damn months, you know, of almost weekly or every other week therapy, and they will get someone negatively project onto them. And I see the downward spiral of self-deprecation. And it's like, do you remember the source of like, maybe that was the issue with this person, and it's not yours to own, yeah, and yours to take on. Right.
Well, you know, so I think this is a good segue into today's show.
Me too.
Because I have a feeling we're going to go places that most people wouldn't think about.
Okay. I hope so.
The power of positive thinking. Everybody talks about that.
Right.
And we have talked about toxic positivity before.
Yes, we have. So refer back to that episode.
And I'm going to contrast that with something that I a little bit later in the show, a construct that I really love, that will make sense when we get through it. But maybe we should just jump right in at the bare bones and talk about, does positive thinking do anything?
Uh-huh. Okay. Do you want to start or me? Well, we prepare separately.
We did, you know, I have two main sources when it comes to medical stuff.
Okay.
And that's Harvard and the Mayo Clinic.
Oh, great sources.
And yeah, I mean, it's like places that have routinely been systematically accurate in what they talk about. And I think across the board that all the reliable sources will tell you positive thinking has all of these benefits to it. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I learned getting ready for today's show that I would love us to reframe here, the power of positive thinking, whether you're talking about Napoleon Hill or Dale Carnegie or, you know, all these sources that go back to the original positive thinking run of things. Mm-hmm. I'd like us for the show, at least for our listeners, to maybe reframe this so that it's not rose-colored glasses. It's not the toxic positivity. No. What Scott's talking about is called optimism.
Yes, Michelle is too.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah. And it's basically like an optimistic, positive mood, overall general positive mood.
And so the studies that I looked at, again, from Harvard and Mayo and places like that, they tend to reframe it as optimism. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there are proven, studied, vetted constructs of being optimistic.
Yes.
And so I'm curious, I'm not quite sure how to get into this with you, Michelle, but
okay.
When people come to you as a therapist,
okay,
do you tend to find that they are optimistic nowadays, or that they are negative and you have to retool them to become more optimistic?
Well, if coaching clients tend to be more optimistic, and mental health clients typically are there because of mental health concerns and negative mood or neuroticism or anxiety or depression. So I'm definitely dealing with more of the sort of negative mood in my mental health practice, and tend to be, there's some neuroticism and misguided energy in my coaching practice, it's a lot less mental health skewed.
The reason it does. The reason I was asking that, and again, this kind of ties in with some of the logical fallacies that we've talked about before, mm-hmm, the cognitive distortions. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the interesting things I found on Mayo's website were some of the sources of not optimistic thinking or negative thinking, right?
Oh, uh-huh.
And so I thought maybe we start with understanding that while we've done an entire show on this, just start being aware, if you find yourself being less than optimistic,
yeah,
you may be doing any of these. Number one is filtering, right? There are some people out there who, it's that whole reticular activating system that goes out, the self-fulfilling prophecy that right. says shit's going to happen today. And so you go find it.
What you think or what you look for, you will find.
And so it's, you know, I'm a big fan of transactional analysis. It's right. that whole, I expect this to happen. And so I filter out everything that right. doesn't meet that expectation. Right. And I think that's, you know, very important. The other is personalizing.
Yeah. Before we go on from filtering. So a classic example, if you're walking around with a worldview that the world is full of idiots, you will find multiple examples of idiots in your day. If you're walking around with a worldview that that people are doing the best they can, people are kind and willing to help you out, you will likewise find that evidence. And it's almost hard to dispute because it's hard to dispute even the person walking around with the positive filter. If they encounter a negative person, they'll go, oh, that person must have been having a bad day. Versus the negative filtered person, the one that's the world is full of idiots, they encounter a nice person, a competent person, and they go, oh, there's the rare exception.
And
brush it
off. I'll just give all of our listeners a quick example of how easy this is to prove to yourself. Take a moment, look around your room. Just take a moment, look around the room where you're at, and I want you to count all the red things in your room. When you see a red thing, just count it. Okay, one, two, right?
Way too much red.
You're looking all around the room. All right, you got it, right? Cool. Now tell me how many black things you saw.
Oh, dang.
You can't do it, right? It's not that the black things don't exist.
Right.
You weren't looking for it. By the way, right. no different. How many of you have gone out, started looking for a car?
Yes.
And suddenly they all appear on the road. Everybody else is driving them.
Yep. Right? No matter what car you pick, it suddenly appears everywhere.
That's filtering.
Thank you.
The other thing that, and I get this a lot with the groups that I tend to roam in, is personalizing. I am constantly telling people, do not take it personally. Yes. It's not even about you.
That's back to my check-in point, right? Why are you taking this chronically critical person personally? It's not theirs. It's theirs to own, not yours.
Yeah. And again, I don't tend to see it in my practice, but I'm sure you do in yours. It comes with the blame game.
Yep.
That people will personalize and they become the victim.
Right.
Essentially. So think about that. Now, that brings us then to something I'm really good at.
Which is?
Catastrophizing.
Oh, yes.
Right? I spent four decades doing that for my clients. My job was to go in, have nightmares for them,
jeez.
And then plan against the nightmare.
How did you survive?
Well, that's why I left. Among other things, that's why I left doing it.
You have great tenacity after 30 years as a trial attorney.
I got really good at it, right? I can catastrophize. I can go dark and twisty with the belt. I'll take any of you on. I can go dark and twisty against any of you. And so the problem with that, at least for me, is that it becomes an automatic muscle response.
Yes.
Where something happens and you immediately go out and you go, what's the worst thing that's going to happen?
Yes.
It becomes a defense survival mechanism, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That does not lead to optimism when you're constantly going out, pinging the world to see what's the worst that's going to happen.
That's right. And
so bear in mind, that also leads to less than optimal optimism.
Yeah, it does.
Blaming. Do you blame everybody else for what's going on in your life? Now, I know, Michelle, you and I have a philosophical divide at some point, usually at the macro level, not the micro level, but usually at the macro level. Again, I grew up with that everything that happens to you is because you've at some level chosen for it to happen. We don't need to get into that discussion.
Good. But
we don't need to get
into listeners. You know, Michelle disagrees.
Yes. Okay. And the reason I bring this up is I don't think Michelle, however, goes around blaming herself. And I use the word blame Sure. Claiming that you're responsible for the bad shit that's happening.
No, not to other people. No. Yeah. And sometimes not to myself. Again, because of death and dying, I'll just quickly say it for first time listeners. Because of my work in death and dying, I really have a hard time with the idea that everything happens for a reason, because I've seen way too many little kids, teens, adults, young people die suddenly. Cancer effing sucks. Aneurysms suck. Heart attacks suck. Car accidents and drunk drivers and overdoses and all that stuff sucks.
So you're going to, by the way, for the record, I love that you brought that up, because you're going to love where I'm going to go with this.
Okay. Go for it.
And it will make sense, by the way. I am going to, in today's show, mend the gap between you and I. How about that?
Oh, good. I'm so excited.
This is very cool. And I've never done this on the show before, because we've never actually had this kind of discussion.
Okay.
But before we get to that,
okay,
something that is very near and dear to both Michelle's and my hearts is the shoulds, right? The rules.
Oh,
who are they? As Jeez. I think, Michelle, you've called it shooting all over yourself.
Yep.
And, you know, when you find the shoulds going off, that for me is always a red flag of there's an if then routine computer program running in your head. Alternatively, for those of you who want to become more philosophical and use the Buddhist approach, when you use should, you are tapping into the root of all suffering, and that is attachment to outcomes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. There's no should without an outcome.
Yep, good point. Mm-hmm.
And so just kind of keep that in the back of your head. Then there's something called magnifying, and that's where, right? Don't sweat the small stuff. It's all small stuff. It's exactly the opposite of that.
Uh-huh. It is. Everything's big. Everything's awful. Everything's terrible. Everything's unmanageable. I can't stand it.
So I got to tell you, when I ran my law firm and I had new attorneys starting, classic brand new attorney behavior is everything's a crisis. Everything. Oh, yeah. Everything's classic an emergency.
New therapist too.
Everything's got to be done right away. And it's like, you know, one of my jobs was to give them perspective.
Yes.
It's like you're going to burn yourself and everybody else out if everything is a freaking fire that has to be put out.
Yes. I had to do this with my new therapist. Like, if there's not a child abuse situation going on, or an imminent suicidality, or an elder abuse situation going on, it is not an emergency. It might be urgent, but you don't need to track me down in 10 different ways.
Exactly. So after that, then there's perfectionism. I've said before, I'm a recovering perfectionist. I like to think of myself now as an excellence seeker. and there's a difference for that.
Okay.
You know, perfectionism will, because it's not achievable.
Right.
That necessarily leads to failure. And depending on your worldview, if you're constantly failing, it's challenging to be optimistic. And then there's something called polarizing. And that's where you literally either see things as good or bad. And there's no middle ground.
Exactly. Yep.
So those are the main things. Now, with that said, if you don't mind, Michelle, one of the things that I thought I would do is just offer this olive branch between the two of us.
Oh, okay.
And offer a different construct.
Okay.
That, again, I've never talked about on the show before, I just love this concept. And that's why I wanted to reframe the use of the term optimism with against positive thinking. And I want you just to listen to the term. Many of you may have heard it before, but it's called reckless optimism.
Uh-huh.
Here's why I love this concept. Reckless optimism takes into account, at least the way I use it, the fact that shit happens. Reckless optimism takes into account, Michelle, that bad stuff happens to little kids and there may not be any immediate cause for it. It's right. It's literally just shit happens.
Okay.
And then it's a choice to embrace that. We know it happens and choose optimism anyway.
Okay, that's what you're calling reckless optimism.
That's what it's reckless because we're doing it in the face of the bad stuff.
Okay.
It's literally, and I think it's a middle ground for where you and I are. This is actually really how I approach everything happens for a reason. It's not that everything is good in the world. It's that I'm going to choose to take it and make something of it. It's not even necessarily make meaning of it. It to the extent, and I'll just go because of the book that, you know, I just had out. You know, when someone dies and I don't care how old you are or young you are, right? They lived a good life. I don't care. I don't know many people. There are a few exceptions who just say, I can't wait to die.
Yeah. Right?
I'm 94 years old. I'm ready to go. Yes.
There are some,
but on your deathbed, there are still some who go, I'm not done yet. I'm not finished. It's, you know, for me, it's to make sure that people who have come into my life, into my sphere of being, that I'm honoring their presence and that the fact that they were alive mattered.
Yes.
So there's a way of taking they're dying or have died. That's reckless optimism to me. It's saying, okay, they died. I'm sad. I feel bad. You know, the condolences on the other side, depending on how distance they are from it. But the reality is I'm going to honor this person's life that it matters.
I agree.
And this comes, by the way, from the very Jewish concept of may your memory be a blessing.
Yeah. May your memory. I really love that concept. May your memory be a blessing. I still don't like the phrase. Everything happens for a reason.
I understand
moving
that.
Moving on.
No. But what I'm saying though is you can have that. But for purposes of today,
I'm still a positive, optimistic person.
That's reckless optimism.
Yeah, it probably is.
Which is good.
So you mentioned the Mayo Clinic. I like the Cleveland Clinic too. But in psychology, we have this database that you can access. Called EBSCO, where you can access all the research, right? And so depending on the amount of time I have to prep for our podcast, I do a little bit of deep diving. And I wanted to, for our scientists that listen, because I know there are some of them, including my partner and his sister, Bell and Fox in 2003, they actually looked at the measure of brain electric activity using EEGs and how negative mood or affectivity versus positive mood or affectivity affects performance. And they found that when you have a more negative mood or affectivity, you struggle with spatial tasks because of the parietal lobe and its effect by these negative moods. So it literally affects your performance. Also, there was another study done, let me see if I can find it in my notes. There was another study that was done about problem solving and that we tend to solve problems more creatively and faster when we are in a positive mood or more optimistic state of being than when we're negative. So basically what they call the broaden and build effect by Dr. Barbara Fredrickson states that like when we are in a negative emotional space, like fear, sadness, anxiety, et cetera, our thoughts and our problem solving skills narrow and the options we consider for our next move also narrow versus when we feel positive emotions like joy, inspiration, engagement, we have a broader look at our options and our choices for our next move. And the broadening allows us to build our resources, our skills, and our knowledge. And that's
so may I interrupt? I don't want you to lose your train of thought, but may I interrupt here? Because I think this is really important for listeners. You know, one thing that I work on with clients is the understanding that most people are afraid to learn new things.
Yeah.
They get test anxiety. They get all of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then I asked them to go back and remember what it was like relearning to do something you've already learned, which was easier, learning something new or yeah. relearning it.
Okay.
For example, we've always said it's like riding a bike, right?
Right, right.
You get back on the frickin' bike, you might wobble a little bit, but you remember versus what it was like when you were first learning.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I do with folks is I reframe for them whatever the situation there's in. And this ties in with what you were just saying by asking them to just imagine that whatever the new situation is, they're actually relearning it, not learning it for the first time. And I learned this skill, by the way, doing improv classes, improvisation. If you have ever watched an actor do improv, they are not taking suggestions on and going, oh, no, I don't want to do that today.
Right,
oh, no,
right.
That's too hard. Right. Oh, no,
yes, and.
I can't do that. What
yes,
they say
and.
Is yes, and.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a positive.
That's uh-huh. that is literally, I'll use my reckless optimism again. That's saying, audience, bring on whatever you want to throw at me.
Right.
I know I got this.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's going to turn out.
Right.
But I got this. Yes. And what if you could go through life as I'm relearning?
Yeah.
It's easy. It's easy for me to do this. That's number one. And number two, bring it on. I got this.
Okay.
I was just talking to a client the other day, and then I want to go back to what you were saying, Michelle. I was just talking to a client the other day, helping her build some leadership tools that she could put in her belt that was brand new. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned to her, have you ever watched these great action movies, particularly the superheroes now?
Yeah.
They've all got this little personality quirk. And that is all this crap can be going on around them. And they've got this very confident, quirky, bring it on. Because look, the world is coming to an end. I don't care. I'll save the world. It's this very weird approach to trauma and tragedy. And guess what? They're superheroes. So it wins. And I'm not asking all of you to wear rose-colored glasses or have toxic positivity. What I'm asking is for all of you, have a little more confidence in your ability to be resilient in a situation. Because I think that will also create more positive thinking for you. If you think you got this,
yes,
it's going to help eliminate the dark and twisty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the studies on grit and ability and resiliency are corresponding to that as a sense of positivity. But a couple little tips, if you want to actually do a little test on your positive versus negative affect schedule, Watson, 1988, you can search for the PANAS, positive and negative affect schedule. You can take a little test. It's about 20 mood scales to rate how you've been feeling over the last couple of days or weeks, et cetera. And it measures things like your excitement or your inspiration, your distress, your guilt, your irritability. And it helps you kind of get a little litmus test of where you are today. So that's a resource. but I also came across this study on positive affect tolerance. It's from Leeds in 2007. I know these are older studies, but positive affect tolerance is the ability to feel or receive positive affect or compliments. Like, have you ever given a compliment to somebody and they sort of poo-poo it or they dismiss it or they're really uncomfortable with, like I used to feel this way. It was very difficult for me to take a compliment and I've had to work on it. To out myself and maybe some others that I've known, Leeds discovered that there's a strong correlation with difficulty accepting a compliment and either emotional or physical neglect or overt abuse in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability to tolerate and integrate positive emotions and events into a shared positive experience is stunted by these adverse childhood events or adverse childhood experiences. But we have neuroplasticity. We have the ability to turn it around and correct it. And one simple thing, if you hear yourself in what I just said, One simple thing that you can do is to train your brain to receive appreciation, compliments, and praise by doing this. Number one, when maintain eye contact or make eye contact with the person giving you the compliment. Number two, take a deep breath into the upper chest and expand the space around your physical heart when you, you know, bring in some space to allow for positive feelings. And while maintaining eye contact, repeat after me, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. Okay. Not I agree with you. Not you're so right. I'm amazing. Not I'm fantastic. Thank God you noticed. I'm not asking you to go that far. I'm just asking you to simply not dismiss the compliment, and you'll be on your way to some corrective positive affect, which is thank you. I appreciate you saying that. Okay. So, you know, don't assume the person's trying to manipulate you into something unless you have prior evidence that they're manipulating you by complimenting you. Just say, thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
I got to tell you again, I just want to jump in here. I have two heroes of mine.
Okay.
And I had been in a situation where in both situations, they were doing meet and greets, signing their books and signing things like that. And I went up, and I, you know, there's usually long lines for some of these folks, like long lines, and you wait in it, and they're going through, and the handlers are shuffling them through. In both situations, I thanked the individual when I got up to them, told them what they had done and how it changed my life. The first hero of mine literally said, "May I give you a hug?"
Oh.
And stood up from the table, came around, and it was a giant bear hug. And then he whispered in my ear, thank you.
Oh.
Right? Now, how's that for taking a compliment? He's taking it.
Yes.
And then the other one it was just a different kind of receiving line. I told them how they had affected me and what it meant. And he pulled me in closer, took my hand, pulled me in, put his other hand on my arm. And literally, again, you leaned in, looked you straight in the eye. I've never seen such intensity before, right? Leaned in, looked me right in the eye and said, thank you. That really means a lot. Oh. And these are from people that, by the way, hear compliments all the time.
Oh, yes.
Right? So, and it's like, I learned from them.
Yes.
Take the compliment. And as the person giving the compliment, my God, you gave meaning to that.
Yes, you did. You helped the person giving the compliment feel good that they said something. You know, they took the risk to compliment you. Not everybody does that easily. So, okay. So are we ready to try to talk about a few things that help people create more positive affect in their life?
We are right after we answer. There was a question posed by one of our live listeners today. And I'm going to kind of truncate it down or simplify it down just a little bit. And that's, can you be positive about a negative thing? Right.
I got to tell you,
yes, that's part of positive thinking or optimism in my mind. And that's learning to set boundaries.
Yeah.
And I am very specific how I spend my heartbeats.
Right.
And where I express my gratitude.
Right.
And if something doesn't comport with your worldview, or it makes you uncomfortable, or it's not part of your tribe, or what, you know, you pick it.
You don't like the funny, you don't like the food.
I'm very positive about my negative thinking, to put it, you know, the way the listener put it. I am. I know what I don't like.
Yeah, that's okay. It's totally, we're not asking that. The toxic positivity that we talked about in January's episode is that you have to like everything and everybody. No, you don't. We're just asking you to skew towards not the negative assumption. tip number one, maintain a gratitude journal. So we're not only making a list of the things we don't like, that would be a negative journal, but we would maintain a list of the things that do meet our approval, that we are grateful for, that do cause us to feel gratitude and happiness. So a gratitude journal is one of those tips and tools. Of course, we've said it a million times. It's so good for so many things, but it's one of the tools that comes from I don't know the first name of this researcher, but Scott, 2018. Believe it or not, Scott, I know it wasn't you, but
that's okay. It's a great name.
It's a great name. And then what were we talking about? Oh, when I talked about the compliments, savor the positive. One of the other things that you want to do to create more positivity is think about a positive memory or experience or a good time that you've had or something that you've appreciated and sit with it and savor it. Like as if it, you know, it's a juicy piece of fruit that you're allowing to savor in your mouth or something.
Well, I've talked about this before, and that's as much as I'm saying relearning helps you learn easier. Mm-hmm. If you start reliving the good stuff in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm a big fan of the re part. R-E, you put anything after it. I'm a big fan of that.
I love that. Do you also buy into the idea of engaging in a hobby that someone likes, like getting into the flow of a favorite hobby and how that leaves you with a feeling of positive emotions and less stress and a sense of accomplishment and fulfillment?
Well, yeah. And my problem, by the way, is, and it is a problem, is I tend to look at everything as either monetizing it or making it commercial. It's the entertainer part of me, right? Okay, I'm doing something. How will it be received? And I've actually been working very hard this year on getting rid of the esteem component to what I do.
Uh-huh.
And working more on, I go play the piano and I don't care if anybody hears it. I play the guitar. I don't care if anybody hears it.
Yes.
That's
what I mean.
You know, I got away from doing hobbies and turned everything into an avocation.
Uh-huh. Yes. Instead of just enjoying it for the experience.
Yeah.
Right. Also, you talk about this all the time, but it was on a list in Scott's research, which was practice loving kindness meditation.
Mm-hmm.
That helps you boost joy and decreases stress. It's actually been known to really decrease your stress level when tested before and afterwards. So a loving kindness meditation doesn't take you very long. It's just a few minutes. And that's a way to increase the positive thinking in your life.
And let me just give everybody real quickly a formula for a loving kindness meditation.
Yeah.
That will work. Here's the script. And I'll use Michelle.
Okay.
I'm thinking of Michelle. And I would say, may Michelle be safe. May she be happy. May she be healthy. May she live with ease.
Yay.
Right?
I love that you do that.
And then here's the real challenge. You do it with yourself.
Oh,
I'm thinking
true.
Of myself. May I be happy? May I be safe? May I be healthy? May I live with ease? Right? You can't do that and get into the feeling of it without feeling better. And ultimately, eventually you'll actually work that loving kindness concept into people you don't like.
Right.
You don't have to love them. I'm not asking you to be a doormat. And by the way, I will never suggest anybody be a people pleaser.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Ever.
Thank you.
But I am saying this is your well-being we're doing this mm-hmm. for. So I'm sorry to interrupt, Michelle, but I thought that.
No, I think that's an excellent formula. It was perfect timing. And we're into the tips section. And before we finish, so similar to hobbies, just indulging in the good things in life, incorporating more pleasurable experiences into your life more often than you currently are. If you're finding yourself in more of a negative affect or a negative state, really want you to take a good look at your self-care plan and look at ways to incorporate more pleasurable experiences into your daily routine, your monthly routine, your quarterly and yearly routine.
And by the way, one of the quick ways, again, I know we're at the end of the show, but one of the quick techniques any of you can do, and actually one of our listeners, I've had this discussion with that individual. It's really funny for us to say, just go be happy, right? we value your life by how much happiness you have in it. And that's really challenging for a lot of people. Well, here's what every one of you can do. Every one of you knows what makes you unhappy. Every one of you knows what you don't want in your life.
Yeah.
Make a list of what you don't want to tolerate, don't want to be in your life, things that make you unhappy. Ooh. Right?
Who you don't want to be with in your
life. Or who. So for example, I don't want to be poor, maybe, because I hear people say, I want to be a millionaire all the time, right? So I don't want to be homeless. I don't want to be poor. I don't want to have the fear of scarcity all the time.
Okay.
You make a list of all these things, right? I don't want to be in this relationship anymore. I don't want to be hit anymore. I don't want you pick whatever the scenario is. I guarantee all of you can make a list of things you do not want in your life. And then on the opposite side of that paper, you take whatever you wrote, write the polar opposite of it.
Okay.
And that's what you start gearing your attention towards.
Okay. So you kind of program in the filtering to the positive.
Yeah. You're moving again
towards
this optimism.
Look for peace.
Because what you've automatically built in with this technique is the optimism that things can change.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's an excellent tip. I know you're a proponent of my last suggestion from the research that I found, which is exercise in a way that you enjoy.
Yep.
Right? We all know that being active is likely to initiate a lot of good neurochemicals in the brain, not to mention be good for your health, but it's also good to make sure that it's something you enjoy doing. Like if you're only exercising and you hate what you're doing, I highly recommend that you find something that you enjoy doing. I don't care what it is, window shopping, walking,
I'll be a little more blunt. I'll be a little more
bowling, lawn bowling.
if you want more optimism in your life, get off your ass.
All right. Get off your ass. That's a great way to end it.
I gotta say, and I'm gonna add one thing that I have discovered.
Oh, good.
I never thought I would be telling anybody on this show, because everybody knows that pre-total knee replacement, I was really active, running, biking, really active. And I've got some limitations that are just built in to the prosthetic that's me now.
Right.
I have discovered, for those of you who don't think you can get out and do anything. Uh-huh. Oh my God, I have discovered chair yoga. I have discovered chair ab routines. Now, will I be doing these forever? No, as I start to build up muscles and endurance, you know, going back to where I was, I won't be doing, I don't know that I won't be doing it. I was shocked. Go on YouTube and look up chair yoga and chair ab routines. I was freaking amazed, not only at how hard they are, but what a good, great workout you're getting.
Without stress to your knees. And
it's novel enough to create interest in the routine. It's freaking fun.
Oh, good. Good, good.
Just go have fun with your workout.
All right. That's a great tip. Thank you for that.
Yeah, because, you want more? You want more optimism?
Yep.
Get off your ass.
Or stay on your ass, but work it out in a chair.
There you go.
All right. Good.
And one last little tip that I discovered. Oh, yes. I discovered it yesterday because the grand bat baby spent the night last night. And yesterday morning, my granddaughter, the middle one, asked if we could do yoga together. And I said, sure. And they go and grab the mats out of their room and we're all getting set up. And it was like, then our youngest grandson is really into Spider-Man. Despite the fact that he knows I'm into Batman, he's into Spider-Man. Uh-huh. And I wanted to make this inclusive of everybody. Uh-huh. Folks, there are superhero yoga workouts. We found a Spider-Man yoga workout.
Oh, I love it.
And right, it's just novel enough. I'm watching this thing going, that actually looks pretty cool.
That's funny. So learn to do your favorite superhero pose.
Yeah. And by the way, there are Wonder Woman workouts, Batman workouts, Superman workouts that you'd never know of. And it's, again, it's the idea of novelty and fun and lightheartedness that you're bringing to the workout.
Yes. I have one last ending thing I want to share that has nothing to do with what we were talking about, but is a callback. And if I don't share it now, I won't remember. Do you remember a few episodes ago where I was kind of having a meltdown and my partner, Brian, joked with me and he's like, you know, you really could, there's a great podcast called Keeping Your Shit Together that you might want to listen to. So we're traveling. So, you know, all things have payback in a good way. So we're traveling from Dallas, we're facing all the travel issues or whatever. And something happened with Brian and he like lost his stuff. And I was like, Brian, there's a really good podcast called Keeping Your Shit Together that you might want to listen to. He laughed hysterically and changed the whole mood.
Well, by the way, and we've talked about it on the show, right? We did a whole show on humor and how that lightens it.
Yes, it does lighten things. Yes.
And that's not that. And again, it's not that every situation is funny, because it's not.
No,
it's not. But at some point you will laugh. You will laugh again at some point. You'll have that humor back.
Yeah, I hope so.
Which, by the way, now leads us to where we're going next week. And next week's show is all about how to set yourself free.
Woo-hoo.
And how to unshackle yourself from the chains that you have put around your own neck.
That's right. That's right. Let's get you free. Let's get rid of those things. Yeah.
All right.
I'm looking forward to it.
We're at the end of the show. Thank you again for listening. All of you, please like, subscribe, share the podcast on your favorite platform. It helps us grow. And with that, I want to thank all of you for being here, and to repeat what I heard yesterday with my grandkids, my heart sees your heart.
Oh, that's beautiful, Scott. Thank you.
All right. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.